Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Alrighty, hour number two, Tinky and Tierney. I was awesome with Joe Morgan. We're definitely going to circle back to some of the things about this documentary. That was great. Hopefully you guys enjoyed that. Coming to you live from the Quicken Loans studio. National mortgage lender, Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently here. It's going to be a really good hour as well. We got inbounds, out of bounds at around 4:40 Eastern, 1:40 Pacific. Next segment, Dan Hicks going to check in from Carnoustie, NBC Golf broadcaster, lead voice there for NBC Golf. And we'll get into Mike Trout and his response and what I think the best response. I'm actually going to do Nike a favor. Not that they need any help for me to make money, but I got something great for them. All right, I did tell you that when we heard from Tiger post-round, we'd get it in for you, and then we'd move back on to the topics at hand. So let me at least squeeze in Tiger post-round. And, I mean, I've listened to him for a long time. Usually, no matter if even if he shoots a 75, all's well in his world. He should be a little pissed off right now, just based on the way he striped it down the middle. Here is Tiger with his own self-assessment. Let's see if he's being honest with himself. Okay, hey, you know what? There you go. That is a pretty honest assessment. I called him on it, and he delivered. Attaboy, Tiger. Now, let's get a little more thoughts on the trickiness. By the way, the three wiggle. I call it a three jack. He calls it a three wiggle. I usually call it a four jack. His thoughts on the actual course. Carnoustie, how's it playing, Tiger? All right. And finally, what was with that stuff on your back? The kinetic tape. You okay, Tiger? All right, there you go. Even par, early tee time tomorrow. So hopefully Tiger throws a few birds on the board. But no doubt the conditions stiffened on the back nine. He wasn't alone. Brooks Koepka, really the only buddy who just lit up the back nine, and that's also Brooks Koepka, who's in his prime, and he's got a couple of majors. All right, so Mike Trout. You know, it's funny, when I first saw this, what Manfred said, and Teek and I talked about it yesterday a little bit, but a lot of people are positioning Manfred's comments as like a real hatchet job on Mike Trout, just a rip job. I didn't take it that way. Was he blunt? Oh, yeah, he was definitely blunt. Was he maybe a little bit more raw than people thought? Yeah. A little bit too honest? Yeah, perhaps. Was he right? Yeah, of course he was right. Now, this went a couple of different ways yesterday. The Angels felt so moved, they released a statement. Now, part of this, by the way, is to further ingratiate themselves when Mike's a free agent. You see, Mike, we've always had your back. Give us that hometown discount. Stay with us here. He'll be a Yankee. No, actually, I don't know if he's going to be a Yankee. I could actually see him maybe being a Philly. I mean, he loves those Eagles. He's got season tickets, you know? So part of the, let's not be fooled here, part of the motivation, while it's a classy response by the Angels, there's also, you know, a little something behind that. And then Trout himself responded to the comments. He said, quote, "I've received lots of questions about Commissioner Manfred's recent statement," Trout said. "I am not a petty guy, and I'd really like to encourage everybody to just move forward. Everything's cool between me and the commish and the story. I'm just ready to play some baseball." Wow. That is such an antiquated view. Like, nobody takes that. That's awesome. It's so pure. It's almost so boring that it's great. I mean, just remember, he's awesome. He really is. Let's see. All right, so you read the statement from the Angels. I don't need to read that again. Here's what Nike should do. How is Nike right now not sitting around with a grease board throwing out ideas for a commercial? How are they not doing this? Well, I could save them the trouble. Here's the next Nike commercial, or really the first one, that just fixates and focuses on the great Mike Trout. Maybe they had a commercial at one point. I don't think they've ever had just a Mike Trout commercial. Maybe. But this is what they need to do in response to what Manfred said. Black and white, really dramatic, you know. And just kind of show them grinding, you know, lifting at the gym, running stairs at the stadium, you know, banging off a tee, his hands bleeding, his hands raw, just being a gym rat. And then, you know, you could probably mess around on the tagline here. You have to, you know, have the trumpets and that melodramatic, you know, you got to have the whole situation set up. But something like this, and I'd like for him to say this, but I think he's too egoless to actually say this. It wouldn't be as potent if you just have some voice drop this in. But if he were to say this off camera, or even staring into the camera, dripping with sweat, eye black, you know, shirt cut off, jacked up. And he says, some people chase a spotlight. I'm chasing immortality. Nike. Boom. That's it. And everything that's implied, it's there, you know. Some people chase the spotlight. Some people got to dance all day on Twitter. Click, 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 selfie, click, click, look where I am, click, click. You know what the worst, just as a quick aside, you know what the worst is? And I've almost called people out on this, but I'm not. And I'm not saying that I've never done this, but the times that I have done it, it's actually been a conversation. You'll see what I mean. You'll see somebody and they'll bump into a famous player or a musician, famous person. And they'll say, hey, you know, just hanging out with so-and-so. You're not hanging out with them or her. You pestered them for a selfie. They threw mercy on you. They said yeah, and they couldn't wait for you to leave. You're hanging out with them. Yeah. Like you're in the middle doing shots or you're talking about your business model over sushi and sake. You're not hanging out with them or her. They can't wait for you to leave. But how about that? Some people chase the spotlight. I'm chasing immortality. Boom. Just do it.
I got goosebumps.
That's the one.
But here's the problem, right? Like, that's a great ad, right? It's a really cool idea. It's a great ad. And it shows his humility while at the same time promoting him and marketing him.
Yep.
But the fact that the Angels came out and made a statement saying, well, he's humble and he doesn't need to do all this kind of stuff, proves Manfred's point.
Mm-hmm. That's why I said Manfred's right.
Yes.
I had no problem with what he said. That's how I started this.
And it's not just that you agree and he's right, but like, by doing what they did,
mm-hmm.
by the Angels stepping up and speaking for Mike Trout and saying he doesn't need to do this, he's humble, he's just, you know, he's a good guy, doesn't care about this kind of stuff, is proving his point. It's not that marketing yourself is a bad thing necessarily, but in order to market yourself, you do have to step out on a limb a little bit and kind of just put yourself out there,
mm-hmm.
and maybe represent yourself in a certain way, maybe in a narcissistic kind of way to an extent, and I get there's a negativity to it, but mm-hmm. at the same time...
Yeah.
That's what you got to do for the game, for yourself, for endorsement dollars.
Those are two separate. You think that it's incumbent upon the athlete to do it for the game?
I think it's a secondary thing.
I got you.
But listen, the game does a ton for Mike Trout, and Mike Trout does a ton for the game also.
What does the game do for Mike Trout? Mike Trout does more for the game than the game does for Mike Trout.
No.
He's earned every penny. What does the game do for Mike Trout? He's earned it.
They give him the platform to make millions of dollars to do something that he loves.
Because he's the best player on the planet.
Sure.
Supply and demand. What have they actually done for him?
I mean, there's a million commercials. I was just watching a great commercial of Mike Trout. It was MLB Network or MLB whatever. Like, this is the MLB. And it was just a commercial of the MLB just trying to promote the league. And so of course, there's a symbiotic relationship. Yeah. But at the same time, I mean, it's a secondary fallout of promoting yourself. You're also promoting the game. Like, when James Harden's doing all this stuff and LeBron's doing XYZ, secondarily, like indirectly, he's helping the NBA
mm-hmm.
and increasing the profile of the NBA. Maybe this is an issue that goes back deeper into MLB players not having a national profile. But at the end of the day, like, you know, maybe baseball is not hitting a youth for a reason because these guys aren't out there marketing themselves enough. We had to go back 10 years to find Ken Griffey Jr. shoes.
Mike, again, that's a lazy statement that you just made. You just blanketly indicted the growth of baseball amongst America's youth. And that's not true. That's not statistically true. We talked about this on Monday. Or was it Friday? Monday. The article in the Times over on Saturday about the incredible decrease. Now, most sports have dropped off a little bit, but soccer's gone from here to there, and hoops and baseball have, you know, suffered through marginal drop-offs, but, that's just the way society's going. That nothing could change that. Baseball's flourishing, right? What are you talking about? Baseball's doing great. You see the All-Star game?
Yeah.
They're all, well, you're just not a fan. I'm not going to waste my
time.
What do
you mean I'm not a fan? I grew up with baseball.
Baseball's
my first love.
But your first love. I mean, I loved, baseball was my first love. Star Wars was probably second. Still love Star Wars.
Yeah, but it all goes back to this. I mean, like, you look at the NBA. The NBA is rising dramatically every year. Now, listen, baseball, revenue-wise, it's doing very well.
Doing incredibly.
Yes.
Yep.
But part of that has to do with 162 games a year. I mean, they have double the amount of games as basketball, and they have, 10 times the amount of games as football,
mm-hmm.
right? So their revenues are half of football in 10 times the amount of games, which means that per game, their revenue per game is what? I mean, I'm not doing the math correctly. 1/100th of what the NFL is. 1/1600.
It's hard to get.
But I
got to step in for a sec because I think that you're even creating an unfair template here. Just because you play 81 home games, right? The A's, and there's maybe, I don't know, 43,000 seats at O.co. And at Trop, there's, I think, 40, whatever, something like that. Yeah, you could say, well, theoretically, you play 81 games, 81 times, 40,000 seats, and average ticket, $30. But that's not what they're doing. And they're still making great, they're an incredible profit. It's not like the stadiums are packed to the gills. You know, a lot of teams aren't drawing, so.
Which is exactly my point, that they're making revenue because of quantity, not because of quality of the game. There's not a lot of people. I mean, there are people who watch. There's a youth that watches, but the 18 to 35 that we always talk about, they're not really watching baseball. And yeah, they're making revenue in baseball for sure, but that's because they have such a huge sample size. When you have 162 games a year, 81 home games a year, compared to 41 in the NBA and 8 in the NFL, you're just inevitably going to make money because you just have so many opportunities to make money.
But Mike, I would also...
People aren't watching baseball the way they used to. It's regional.
I know they're not.
People aren't going to games the way they used to.
No, they're not.
And the passion for baseball is not the way it used to be.
No, that's established. You're right on that. I agree with that part. People don't consume... That's an old argument. I'm not even going to waste time on that. You're right. People don't watch baseball they used to. It's more in the background, more regional. We've talked about this a lot. But I would also say that on some level, the length of the season is actually an impediment to their growth. It could be, because when you're bad and you play 6.5 months, there's a greater chance of apathy. If you have 8 home games and you're a bad NFL team, you're still going to say, as long as it's not snowing 12 inches, we'll go fire up the grill. You know, there's still 45,000, 50,000 people watching the Browns all these years, and they're terrible because they go and they tailgate and they have their buses and they have their tricked up cars and they got their jerseys and they're playing, not foosball. What's the...
Cornhole?
Yeah, I'm so good at that game too, by the way.
I'll take you down.
I'll crush you. I'll crush you.
There are some skills like that people have for no reason whatsoever, especially after like 2 drinks. Give me like 2 beers, and I can just cornhole like
it's
all
great.
Day, all
day. It was actually on ESPN the other night, the Cornhole Championships. You seen that?
Yeah. Didn't you see that fight like a few weeks ago? There was a bunch of guys all brawling over cornhole.
I did see that.
I mean,
it was at a kids' party,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. People are idiots.
We know that. But think about this. If you're a Chicago White Sox fan right now, if you're a Padres fan, I mean, you're just like, why would I go? Why would I go? 81 games, really the last 30, really the last 50 for a lot of these teams at home are completely meaningless. And there's no motivation to go. So I think it actually can hurt the sport in certain markets more than, don't get me wrong, equally for the Red Sox, the Yankees, the Giants when they're good, the Dodgers, the Cubs. I mean, obviously, there's good. The Brewers are really good. Philly fans are energized. The Nationals get their mojo in the second half. I get it. I get it. But there's still probably 10 teams in baseball. Fans aren't going no matter what you do. So
For sure. But I think part of that has to do with the lack of either the league or the players themselves properly marketing themselves. In the NBA, I can name you 15 to 20 guys right now that are all over the place.
How did
marketing.
We market Dwight Gooden in 1985? We didn't.
Well,
you just knew that he was great. You showed up and you watched him pitch.
Yeah, but this is a different world. The NBA is marketing themselves. The NFL is tougher because you're wearing helmets. You're not as recognizable. But these guys, they market themselves, especially the quarterbacks.
I agree with that.
Baseball is not marketing themselves. And this is Manfred's point. And this is why when the Angels come out with a statement backing how humble he is, I respect that. I appreciate that. But you're not going to be able to market yourself by being humble. The way to market yourself is to not be humble.
Let me ask you this.
And it's unfair.
Yeah.
And it sucks that this is the world that we live in, but it's the reality.
But just to reestablish, I'm in agreement. What Manfred said, he's literally right. Everything he said, I thought he connected dots well. A little raw, a little brash for the best player in the game, sure. But he's fundamentally correct. I guess if I own the Angels, I don't think that Mike Trout's beholden to anybody but us. Show up. Hit 330, hit 320, drive in 120, steal 15, 20 bases, hit 40 bombs, win a gold glove, win the MVP like you almost always do, fill the house 80% of the way for 81 games, and we're all good. Like, I don't know why the Angels should really care.
because they've made the playoffs once since 2010.
But that's different than marketability. That is,
it
that's
could be part of it. It could be part of it, though.
That's
marketability
viable.
Leads to more revenue dollars for TV, more revenue for fans going
Artie
to
Moreno's
games,
got his
more
deep
money
pockets
to spend on players.
Artie Moreno's got deep pockets. Well, they got money.
Then they need to spend better and do something. Maybe players wanted to go to L.A. Who knows what it is, but they're doing something not right.
Santos are loving this.
You got the best player in the game. You can't make the playoffs.
It's baseball.
Do something.
It's baseball. Ernie Banks never made the World Series. Come on. You know how that goes.
That was also different, though. You don't have the playoffs.
Hey, Mike, we grew up watching Don Mattingly win an MVP and was basically a modern-day Stan Musial until he got hurt. We never saw him in the playoffs. It's unfair to drop that at Mike Trout's doorstep or even the Angels' doorstep. Now, at some point, they're going to have to fix it or he's going to bounce, but baseball's hard to build. You need a lot of elements. You got to get lucky in some regards. All right, Dan Hicks is going to join us. Mike, he's at Carnoustie, right? Nice. So he's been walking the grounds, doing his thing for NBC and the Golf Channel. And we'll parachute in on Tiger's round, check the leaderboard, get a sense of the conditions tomorrow. Dan Hicks coming up next. Talk a little Open Championship right here on CBS Sports Radio. Hey, CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line is 855-212-4227, brought to you by GEICO. Hey, everybody, quick way to save a little money. Switch to GEICO, whether it's homeowners, renters, or motorcycle insurance. Get it all at GEICO.com. I was working on my Nike commercial during the break here. Might have to refine it a little bit. I want to stick with the line, the spotlight. I want to have Mike Trout look in the camera. He's all sweaty. You know, he's got the eye black on and all that. And he says, some people chase the spotlight. And he kind of pauses. He goes, me? I'm chasing ghosts. And over his shoulder is like a montage of like Tris Speaker and Ty Cobb and Ruth and Aaron and Mays and Stan Musial. Come on, Nike. Give me one millionth of the percentage and I'll be happy. All right, let's get back to golf. Good enough to have the great Dan Hicks call in from Carnoustie. Dan, of course, in the 18th tower with the equally great Johnny Miller. He's been doing that today. He'll do it tomorrow as well on the Golf Channel. Of course, over the weekend, full throttle NBC. When the guys who are playing well make the cut and we start to zero in on the Claret Jug. Dan, Tiki and Tierney. Tiki is out, but welcome back to the show. How are you today?
Hey, I'm doing good, Brandon. How are you?
All right. I think the last time you were in, you actually brought the Claret Jug, right?
I did. We actually had the coveted jug with us. Yeah. It was fun. We did what do they call it? The car wash with the Claret Jug around New York, and we did a good stop with you guys. It was fun.
Oh man, I got a nice picture from that day. That was sweet. So
it's a photo opportunity.
But it's so small. You'd think for the open, I get it. You can throw a little size on that thing, Dan. No.
Yeah, but it's something special about it. It's obviously the oldest championship in golf. And mm-hmm. There's something about it. We had it up in the booth today, and you wouldn't believe, you know, everybody wanted to take their picture with it. Everybody wanted to hold it.
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty cool.
It's phenomenal. So I'm watching Get Up. You know, I taped it at 1:30 Eastern, and I just buzzed through a couple of hours before Tiger teed off at 10:21 Eastern. And I'm seeing the sun shining, you know, pretty benign conditions, no wind, browned out fairways. So you're getting 70, 80, 90-yard rolls off the tee in some cases. Seeing a 65, or 66, I should say, a 67, a 68, a lot of 69s. And then I see Tiger drop two red numbers in the first four holes. And now I know he shot even par, and for the most part, even par, day one of a major is decent. But, Dan, it should have been better than a 71 today. He hit the ball off the tee. He left a couple of shots out there.
Yeah, he did. And the thing that killed him was he just killed these tee shots at the two of the par fives at 6 and 14. And, you know, I mean, there's no way that he shouldn't have birdied at least one of them or both of them, and it ended up parring them both. So that hurt him. But the good thing is he got off to a decent start. He's only five back. You're right, it could have been better, but he's only five back. And what he's been doing lately is getting out of position at the start of the first round. I mean, his rankings of first-round scoring are way down. They're like 160th or something like that. So he's always been kind of, you know, he got off the terrible start at Shinnecock at the U.S. Open. He triple bogeyed the first hole, and he was plus three before he even got going. Mm-hmm. And this time he birdied two out of the first four, and he hung on to the bag. He played the last three holes, which are the toughest in major championship golf period, at even par. And he had a three-putt at 13. So could have been a lot worse. But he's only five back, and this thing's just getting going. And there's some rain that's due in tomorrow, so there's going to be some elements. I don't think it's going to change the way the course plays too much because it's as hard and fast as any major championship we've ever seen. So it's going to be a fun Friday and an even better weekend.
I'm curious, Dan, what is Johnny saying either on the air or off the air? You know, Tiger obviously changed putters, I guess it's about a month or so ago, right around that window, maybe give a week either way. Yeah. It looks like he's rolling it pretty confidently. Is Johnny convinced that thing will stand up over a couple of rounds or not yet?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. We came on the air and Tiger was in the throes of this two birdies in the first four holes. So we were all Tiger all the time there for a while. And I got the sense on the air and even off the air, you know, and Johnny's not going to mince words. If he doesn't think he's got it, he's not going to think he's going to, you know, do much. But he's got a great feeling about him. And I think everybody does too, because in these Open Championship venues, I know Tiger's 42 and he still has some great length to his shots and this and that, but it also enables a guy that maybe isn't feeling the best about his putting. The greens aren't really fast. So once you get in the fairway and avoid all these bunkers that seem to pop up every place, and you get yourself in position, you can stroke some in on the greens.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Johnny was pointing all that out, and it kind of made sense. And I think that the fact that he got off to a good start, and Johnny really likes his swing. He really thinks that his swing looks really good. Short game is great. Just that putter's got to cooperate. And I think on these greens, he's got a good chance to be there in the end. I really do.
That's what we want to hear. Talking to Dan Hicks, of course, contributing to NBC Sports coverage of the 147th Open. Carnoustie, it's in Scotland. He's the play-by-play man along with his buddy Johnny Miller, who's the analyst. And live coverage of the Open continues from 1:30 a.m. to 4 Eastern on the Golf Channel Friday and also into the weekend on both Golf Channel and NBC. The historians, this is where I'm going to hand it off to you. I've never seen, let alone a major, any golf course where a fairway is literally faster than the green. Is that well-received? Is it still being determined? What are they saying on the range about the way it's playing with the fairways here?
You know, all the players have, there have not been any complaints, which is pretty crazy in a major championship. And to see a course like this, we came on the air with Johnny today, and I asked him, I said, have you ever seen a golf course this fast? He said, never. And Johnny won the 76 Open at Birkdale, which is a historically dry part of the summer in the U.K. And this summer in the U.K. is on pace to be as dry and, you know, even hotter than it was 43 years ago when Johnny won on a baked-out Royal Birkdale course. So,
wow.
I haven't heard anybody complain about it. We just saw Patrick Cantlay at dinner. He's a fine young player who could hoist that claret jug on Sunday. Shot one under, asked him about it. He says, I love this place. You know, everybody has said the same thing. I think they sense that it equalizes everything. You've got a Brooks Koepka and a Dustin Johnson who are bombing it with driver off maybe half the holes. And then you have other guys that are playing irons off the tee. So I think everybody likes it for different reasons, but I think they all think it's fair, and they're all having their crack at Lynx Golf.
What happened to Jordan Spieth? I was like, it was a four-shot swing. I mean, obviously the ball just didn't go where he wanted, but was there maybe a meltdown in the way he mapped it out, or was it just sloppy swings?
Yeah, he just got caught up with some errant swings. He got away with it earlier in his round, and he was 3 under par as he got to the 15th hole. The last four holes, really, not just 16, 17, and 18, 15's a bear. He got out of position at 15 and doubled it, and then he went into 16, which is an unbelievable 245-yard par 3. He just got out of position a little bit too often. He got lucky a little bit early on, but, you know, sooner or later, this thing is going to make you pay. You cannot get away with that for 18 holes, much less even 9 holes. So he got away with it for a while. He's going to have to kind of shore it up because he had a rough stretch coming back. So, you know, he's still not out of it. I mean, this leaderboard's going to be turned upside down in many ways by the time we hit Saturday. So,
yep.
You know, he's still got a shot, no doubt.
Can you hone in on a number that you think is going to be the cut line, or is it too early?
Wow. You know, it all depends on this weather tomorrow. I don't think there's a lot of wind in it, so I don't think it's going to affect play too much other than maybe be a little bit of a nuisance for the guys. But I'm thinking maybe +2 if it gets a little nastier tomorrow than we think. Maybe +3, but right around there because the lead's at -5 right now. And
yep.
I think this morning the morning wave got better at the draw.
Yeah.
No doubt. I mean, the guys coming in were just trying to hang on. I think the last 12 groups there was not one single player under par, and Tiger was one of those and had it going under par until he kind of had a rough time of it coming in. It wasn't real rough, but he just wasn't able to hang on to under par numbers, but. I think this morning was the easiest you're going to see this golf course play. It was a beautiful day, as you mentioned. So I think it's only going to get tougher, and with the rain tomorrow, who knows?
You know what I wanted to ask you? We're talking to Dan Hicks, of course, Golf Channel, NBC, with us here on Tiki and Tierney. We've had Brandel Chamblee on the show a lot. I like Brandel. So a lot of people don't, right? He's opinionated. He's really honed in on the swing, the angles, the numbers, the metrics, the data. I'm pretty sure there's a lot of people, you know, that recent flair would fill in the golf.com article, whatever. I'm sure there's a lot of people that are real curious to see how he plays on the senior tour. Do you think that, you know, quietly or maybe not so quietly, that the part of the golf community is rooting against him? Because he's a polarizing guy.
No doubt. You know, and I'll never forget when Brandel first got into this business and talking with him, he was talking with me and he said, I really admire what Johnny Miller's done through the years. And I said, well, what do you mean by that? He said he's been absolutely honest. He does not care what the players think about him. He does not care what a member of the family thinks about, you know, what he says. He's just been truly honest with the viewer. And I always remembered that, and I thought, that's pretty good. That's pretty cool, because there's not a lot of guys out there that are willing to really talk without a filter like Johnny has, and Brandel's done the same thing.
Yeah.
You got to hand it to a guy who has that kind of honesty. Now, he's being paid for his opinion. He's not being paid to please anybody. His first responsibility, I say this a lot about, and in defense of Johnny, quote-unquote, is that he's serving the viewer at home first and foremost. He's not there to try to make friends with any of the players. But here's Brandel, and you gotta admire him for putting his game out there.
Yes.
He hasn't played competitive golf in all these years. He's going to try to qualify on Monday for the Open Championship or the Senior Open over here, along with Gary Coke, who works with us as well. And Jerry Foltz is another Golf Channel guy who's going to try to qualify for the same Open. So I got to hand it to Brandel Chamblee, who knows he's going to have a target on his back, who knows there's going to be a lot of people, as you said, rooting that, oh, geez, the guy that criticizes everybody's going to get out there and choke and melt down at 90 or whatever.
Yep.
I got to hand it to a guy. I got to hand it to Brandel for putting his game on display and putting the pencil on the card and saying, all right, let's see what we can do. So I hope he does well, but I get it. I know there's a lot of people out there would like to see him you know, really fall on his face, but I think that, you know, I mean, I don't know what you're going to get out of thinking that, but I wish him the best, and I really admire what he's doing.
No doubt. And listen, you've been doing this a long time. You've worked with a lot of people, different sports. If everybody likes you in terms of an analyst role, if you're universally liked, chances are you're not very interesting or you're not very honest because you haven't offended anybody.
Go. Yeah, sounds like you've been in this broadcasting business for a little time.
Yeah, I like to offend people. Nah. But I do like to be honest here. Dan,
you got to be honest.
You got to be, because they can see right through it. Come on.
Yourself.
You know, listen, your wife's in the business. You know how it goes. You got to be honest. Mm-hmm. You got to let people know what you're thinking.
People out there in television world, you know, the audience, they're smart. You can never underestimate the audience. They know when you're, you know, trying to put one over on them, or they know if you've done your homework, they know if you've done your research.
Yep.
And if you've done that part of it, like Brandel does and Johnny does, and we all try to do, or at least the people that are dedicated, you know, then you just like let the chips fall where they may. But you give it your best shot, you give your best formulated opinion, and you go with that.
You see what happens. Have a great time. The 18th Tower tomorrow on the Golf Channel on the weekend. Of course, the usual perch with the great Johnny Miller on NBC, the Open Championship. Thanks for hopping on, Dan. I appreciate you calling in.
Yeah, always good to chat with you, Brandon. Take care. Thanks for having me, Paul.
Will do. You bet. You bet. All right, little late. Axe update. We'll get inbounds, out of bounds after that. Here's the Axe. Okay, we're going to get to Kawhi Leonard. There's some more layers to this conversation. We'll get to that coming up top of the next hour. And rough couple of days here for UNC football. The greater issue, their head coach, Fedora. Well, this guy's living on a different planet, isn't he? What's up, Mike?
Maybe we'll hit this after inbounds, out of bounds.
What
but
do we
in
got?
From Adrian Wojnarowski.
Is this a Woj bomb?
This is a Woj bomb.
Does it involve Kawhi?
No, it does not.
Does it involve my Knicks?
It does not, but it involves somebody involved in your Knicks. Oklahoma City has agreed to trade Carmelo Anthony and a protected 2022 first-round pick to Atlanta for point guard Dennis Schroeder and Mike Muscala. Wow.
That's a weird
Anthony will
trade.
Be waived, and he will join a team of his choice, Rockets or the frontrunner.
All right, so Schroeder now with Westbrook, with Paul George, with Roberson, who's back. Yeah, we have to get to this after the inbounds, out of bounds. Wow. That's pretty crazy. I mean, Kamar, and it doesn't say where Carmelo's going to sign, does it? We guess maybe the Rockets, maybe the Lakers. Woj doesn't have that, does he?
He says Rockets are the front runner.
Rockets front runner. Okay. All right. Well, there you go. Another day, another story for the NBA. Got to love it. Inbounds, out of bounds. Let's go.
Anything can happen in sports and often does. What's right, what's wrong, and who's just crazy? We decide. Inbounds and Out of Bounds now.
Okay, Inbounds, Out of Bounds, brought to you by Discover Card. Stressing over college costs, Discover Card student loans offer great rates, zero fees, plus cash reward for good grades, so it pays to study. Visit discoverstudentloans.com. Limitations apply. No teak. Santa's going to run point. Go ahead, Mike, what you got?
All right, number one, Titans defensive tackle Jarrell Casey told CNN yesterday he intends to continue protesting during the national anthem despite the new league policy that prohibits it.
I'm going to take a fine this year. Why not? I'm going to protest during the flag. That's what I'm going to say now. I'm going to take my fine. So it is what it is. I ain't going to let them stop me doing what I want to do. And if they want to have these battles between players and organization, it's what it's going to be.
Team President Steve Underwood chimed in saying, I think our head coach and GM want to sit down and have a conversation with him. I think there might be some misunderstanding on his part because the new league policy does not provide anywhere that fines are made against players, they are made against the teams. Mm. Okay. Inbounds, Out of Bounds, the new NFL league policy to not protest during the anthem is going to do more harm than good.
I think that's out of bounds. You know, listen, I appreciate where he's coming from, but I think it's still out of bounds here. I think it's actually been a pretty quiet summer in that regard. Doesn't mean that, you know, one little flare-up can't ratchet the conversation up a few decibels for sure. But you got to think about this in the terms of history here. And, you know, anything that you believe in, anything strong, with any sort of conviction, generally there's a risk that comes with it. We were talking about Ted Williams the other day and how he missed three prime seasons, or is it four? At least three. I think it was three. Three seasons as a pilot to World War II. You know, when you take a stance, there is risk involved. Now, the risk here is purely monetary. He's not going to lose his life. He's not going to lose his job. He might get fined. But if it's that important to him, and it seems like it is, then he's going to remain true to his beliefs, and you got to respect that. But I don't think this will be a season where that overtakes the league. I think we're past that point. Out of bounds.
Are you in or are you out?
Sticking to the AFC South, Jaguars defensive tackle Malik Jackson is at it again. Last year, Jackson predicted the team would win the Super Bowl and nearly did, going 10-6, winning the South, and holding a double-digit fourth-quarter lead on the Pats before falling to Brady and company in the AFC title game. What a collapse.
God, they should have won that.
Now Jackson has upped his confidence, telling TMZ this.
I think we're going 16-0. You know
16-0?
I've called it 16-0. You know, I don't think anybody can beat us as long as we stay healthy and do what we're supposed to do. You know, nobody had us last year. We went to the AFC championship. We were this close. So
close.
I think, you know, we'll build our character, and I think we're going to be all right.
The Jaguars will win at least 12 games this season.
As out of bounds here, not because I don't like the Jaguars. I don't like the way their schedule lines up. They got the first eight games that they've got. I mean, you can make a case that, I mean, if they're not on point out of the chute, they could be sub-500 halfway home. At the Giants, going to be a lot better this year. I mean, just think about the Giants' offense. If Eli's just halfway decent, and he should be, Saquon Barkley, Odell Beckham Jr., Ingram, Shepard, I mean, a souped-up offensive line. That's going to be a big challenge on the road in week one. You got the Giants, you got a rematch with the Pats. Now, that's a home game. Then you play the Titans in week three, a playoff team. Then you play the Jets. That should be pretty easy. Jets aren't going to be that good this year. But then you got to go to Kansas City. You got to go to Dallas. You got to play Houston. And by then, Deshaun Watson should be, I mean, he's going to be fully recovered by week one. But by then, he should be really, really flowing. And you got to play the world champion Eagles. So, you know, they've got to take advantage of weeks two, three, and four, where they've got three straight home games, which is rare in the NFL. They're good. They're obviously not 16-0 good, and I don't even think that they're 12-4 good because of the schedule. Out of bounds.
Are you in or are you out?
LeBron James's close friend and business manager, Maverick Carter, spoke with Variety yesterday and detailed what he expected from King James in the next 10 years.
Yeah, 10 years from now, I know LeBron will be owning a basketball team or maybe even a football team because he does like football and he's looked at football ownership. So he'll be owning a basketball team and running it.
Steph Curry and Sean P. Diddy Combs joined a bid to own the owners, the Panthers, but their group was outbid.
Yeah.
Of the 32 NFL-only owners, only Shad Khan of the Jaguars, who is of Pakistani descent, is a minority.
Mm-hmm.
With today's political climate.
What are the great names in sport,
Shad
by
Khan?
The way?
And that mustache, too.
Shad Khan.
Yeah, and that mustache.
Shad Khan.
Kind of looks like Ron Jeremy.
Little Mario.
Too,
little Ron Jeremy, a little Mario. Interesting look there.
In today's political climate, the NFL does need a prominent minority owner.
I'm going to say out of bounds, but I want to qualify it with this. I'm more in touch and certainly more aware of the process, which is not always fair to potential minority owners. I'm not a big believer in just saying, you know, hey, we need to have X amount of whites or X amount of blacks or X amount of Hispanics. I'm still a believer that the cream is going to rise to the top and the best people qualified for those jobs should get those jobs. But the problem with ownership in the NFL and the other sports, to be fair, pertaining to minority ownership, is that the process of evaluation isn't really fair. So as long as that's fair, and that needs to be tweaked a little bit, no doubt. The reason I say out of bounds is because my focus is more on the process and less about just having an even scoreboard just to say we have an even scoreboard. It's still got to be a meritocracy, but the pool needs to have a better chance to rise to the surface. And I don't know that they've had that so far, so out of bounds. But it's a good question.
Are you in or are you out?
The New York Mets' oft-injured slugger, Yoenis Cespedes, is on the mend again. And during last night's rehab assignment in Rookie League, Cespedes made his first career start at first base. The 32-year-old has only played in 37 games this season, piggybacking off last season where he played just 81 games. The Mets should move Cespedes to first base when he returns.
Oh, God. I'm going to say inbounds here. The answer is inbounds. At least as an experiment here to... Listen, the rest of the regular season is utterly meaningless for the Mets. It means nothing. They've got Jose Reyes playing every day. He's batting 175. Conforto has not been what I think he eventually will get back to being, but he's just not having a good season coming off the shoulder injury. The bullpen's messy. They don't have a first baseman. A former top prospect, Dom Smith, is a mess. The guy that you're looking at now on screen, Cespedes, has been hurt the whole year. Jay Bruce is stealing money. He's hurt as well. What the Mets, they need to view the final, 50 games, however, 50 games, whatever they're, they've got to view this as a laboratory for next season. And I'd have no problem, wins and losses aren't important, but you got to determine who's a piece of the puzzle and who's not. That includes the trade market, sifting through that with DeGrom and Noah Syndergaard, and seeing if Cespedes is going to be a viable first baseman. I think he can, because he played a little bit of third base in Cuba, which means he's got at least the requisite hands to keep the ball in front of him. I'd give it a shot. I think inbounds, if the Mets are smart, they would try that.
Are you in or are you out?
During yesterday's ACC Media Days, Miami head coach Mark Richt discussed the team's 2017 national sensation, the turnover chain.
Oh. It's the greatest thing since sliced bread. It is gaudy and it's beautiful. But like I've said all year long, you know, if we got three turnovers last year, it would have been mocked. You know, it had been laughed at. And but when you get 30, 31 turnovers or whatever it was, maybe there's something to it. And it did create an awful lot of excitement for our team. It was a special thing.
Objects like Miami's turnover chain are effective motivational tools.
Absolutely inbounds, especially today. First of all, it just breeds internal competition, number one. And then, you know, look at the picture up there. Every time they get a turnover, what happens? Boom, camera goes right to the sideline. They show the presentation. It hits social media. The young kids are obviously in tune with that. I think it's awesome. I thought it was awesome from the first second. There's been a couple of cheesy teams that have tried to steal that. The U's got it first up. D, I got you on that, D-Cell. This is the U. They're original with this. I think it's awesome. I think it's beyond awesome. I think that is so sweet and so fresh. It's a great concept. At this point, it's obviously working. So, hey, if you had no turnovers, you'd look dopey. They put themselves out there. They deliver. Players chase it. I think it's awesome. Big time fan.
Tune in next time for another edition of Inbounds or Out of Bounds with Tiki and Tierney.
It weighs over 6 pounds. Is that what he said?
6 pounds.
Give it a Run DMC, a run for their money. That thing's gaudy, is right. Thing's awesome. Ah, man. Now, if you get that, do you get to bring that back to the dorm room? Can you wear that to the frat party? Can you wear it to a keg party that night? Probably could, right? All right, we'll hit that Woj bomb coming up next.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 40%. Up to 40% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.